Human Services. It's Thursday, March 20th, 2003, and it's public hearing on Senate Bill 5514. Just housekeeping, if there's anyone in the audience who has a cell phone, please make certain that you turn it off so that it doesn't disrupt the hearings. And also we have with us Rosie the pig, and Rosie, oh gosh, we got another baseball cap today.
We're such a fashion trend here.
And Rosie is there to collect monies that will be donated to the Oregon Food Bank at the end of session. Rosie is trying to keep everyone from using acronyms, and that's the alphabet soup. So when one is so inclined, or know that they're going to be inclined to use a lot of alphabets, then Rosie is there to remind them to stuff the pig. So with that, Mr. Olson, I know we're hearing the Oregon Disabilities Commission today, and you're on. And I'm sorry, I apologize for being late.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. This is the public hearing on Senate Bill 5514, the budget bill for the Oregon Disabilities Commission. The total funds budget, governor's budget, is 23.5% below the 0103 legislatively approved budget, and that is due primarily to the loss of federal funds for the Technology Access for Life Needs Program. However, I found out yesterday that there is federal funding that has been reauthorized for the Talon grant for the next federal fiscal year. So we'll be making that adjustment in the LFO recommendations to this subcommittee.
That's a big one, that's correct.
Yes. That's significant money for this agency. The general fund part of the budget is 4.3% above the legislatively approved level. That is primarily for inflation and roll-up costs of salary increases and benefits. There are no budget notes from the 2001 session. There was a Secretary of State audit that was conducted, a change of director audit, and you have in your packet a summary report of that audit. There are no interim studies or reports done, no fee adjustments. The agency did not appear before the emergency board during the interim. The main issue facing this commission is the economic instability and lack of funding to provide services to all those that would like services. And
good. Janine and Lynn and Pam.
And actually, Lynn.
Okay.
We fed it?
Oh, no, you haven't fed it.
Let me feed it.
Okay, you can feed
it.
Whoever.
This is Janine's contribution to work.
Thank you, Janine.
What is this, Madam Chair? Everybody gives up first and pays the money up front.
You know, it's just one of those procedures that they're just paying their atonement ahead of time.
It's like paying for your sins before you commit them.
That's correct.
I don't understand that.
No, Madam Chair, it's actually intimidation.
On both ends. Because every time they do an acronym, they pay a dollar. And so if they use it more than, 10 times, they're better off giving five and don't worry about the others.
not with you, Matthew.
Go ahead.
And it's a worthy cause. So we'll
that's
just
right.
Contribute to the food bank. Chair Winters and committee members, my name is Janine Delaney, and I am the director of the Oregon Disabilities Commission. And I'll just begin by, you have the presentation in front of you, and it starts out by just letting you know what our statutory authority is. And basically, there is a need to create a link among and between agencies that serve people with disabilities so that the resources limited resources can be more used more effectively. And the second part of that was to create an environment in the state of Oregon where people with disabilities are active and equal participants with economic, social, legal, and political equity. That's our main statutory authority. When you think of our work, we really have two major goals. We connect people with disabilities with the services they need, and we're there to improve the access to and the effectiveness and appropriateness of services provided to Oregonians with disabilities. And really, when you think about the programs, they can all be connected to those two goals, to connect Oregonians with the services they need, and then really to be that policy advisor to help improve the effectiveness and availability of services. When we do that, we are guided by six core values, and they are universal access. Does what we do increase communication access for people who need that, who need alternate formats or who are deaf or hard of hearing? Does it promote structural access, better physical access into buildings and facilities? And does it help promote program access? Does it help change policies and procedures so that people with disabilities can better utilize the state programs and services that are there for them? The second one is independence. Does what we do promote full independence for people with disabilities and all of their daily living skills, transportation, and community activities? Inclusion. Do we assist people with disabilities to obtain full integration, again, into the economic, political, social, cultural, and educational mainstream? Equal rights. It's a big part of what we do is facilitation of the implementation of the Americans with Disabilities Act and other laws that impact the lives of people with disabilities. Employment. We started out, believe it or not, years ago as the Committee on the Handicap Employment of People with Disabilities or something like that. So what we do still has very much to do with improving employment opportunities for people with disabilities. And the last one is, does it promote self-determination, which is to say that do people with disabilities have meaningful choices, and do they direct their environment and services to the degree possible? Then I've provided you with just a little bit of a kind of framework for who are people with disabilities in Oregon. And we got this data from the Center on Disease Control conducts a behavioral risk factor surveillance survey. And this is 2001 data. I don't have the 02 or 03 data analyzed yet. The disability component of this survey was conducted primarily through phone calls, and 2,539 people answered the disability-related questions. Of those people, 24% met the criteria for being identified as a person with a disability, which is to say that they were limited in performing at least one or in many times more activities of their daily life. It's statistically weighted to look at non-institutionalized adults, so this information does not include children, and it does not include seniors in nursing homes. And I'm not going to go over necessarily the demographics. I don't think it's too striking, although I guess I was surprised that the difference between those who completed college between people with disabilities and people without was really pretty minimal. I would like to call your attention to the employment data. If you look at that chart, you'll notice that 43% of people with disabilities were employed versus 67% of people without disabilities. That is a huge gap, and that continues to be the number one issue for people with disabilities. And then if you look at the next one, 21% of people with disabilities versus 5% of people without disabilities were unemployed or unable to work. Again, another pretty significant gap. The income data, again, no surprises. Probably you'll notice that at the low end, there are more people with disabilities living in poverty or below $15,000, and at the high end, there are fewer people with disabilities who make more than $50,000 a year. So that's just some basic demographic and income employment information that, one, relates to the benchmarks and I thought would be a good framework. I'd like to talk now about our main general advocacy and administrative program. It's the one that's funded by general funds, and we're there to both identify and advocate for issues critical to people with disabilities. We're there to assist the general public and state agencies and others to locate appropriate services. We're the clearinghouse. This is the part where we help connect people with the services they need. We're there to provide technical assistance to building code officials and architects on issues of structural access. And that's a volunteer program. We've trained folks to be structural access designees to provide this input. We assist local and state agencies to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. We do that by providing training and technical assistance. We report We report to the governor and the legislature on an annual basis and to state agencies on more than an annual basis about the issues that we find. And then we coordinate and co-sponsor activities as necessary. And I'm going to talk about some of those right now. If you look at, I handed you a page just about some specific activities that we do, just to give you a sense of what this general program really means. One of the things that we've been very interested in doing over the past few years is conducting forums around the state. We've actually done probably 13 of them, but in this biennium, we've actually completed four and have two more on schedule. And they're all over. We've done them all the way from the South Coast to Ontario, Gresham, Umatilla. But the ones in this biennium that we did were Salem, Baker City, Bend, and Newport. And then we've got scheduled Beaverton and Medford area. The reason that these are so important is we don't go and just say, okay, tell us all your problems and concerns, because we know what they are: employment, transportation, housing, access to health care. What we do is get the people with the disabilities, the public agencies, the private nonprofit providers, all together in the same room and say, okay, here are the problems. What can we do about? What resources do we have to bring to the table? Not just economic resources, but what knowledge and information. And what happens is somebody will say, oh, I didn't know that our hospital was doing this. We need some training on disability issues. Is there a local provider who can do the training? And we'll hook them up with an independent living center. So it's through that kind of collective energy or synergy that happens when we bring those people together that then they meet and go on to solve their local issues. We leave. We're not there to tell them how to do what they do. We're there to bring people together and get them to look at what the issues are and work together. That's one of the things we do. We do our employer award ceremony every year, so we've done two this biennium, really to promote employment for people with disabilities. We recognize those employers who are doing a good job of hiring, of promoting, and retaining people with disabilities. We showcase them. We also then ask them to go back and talk to other employers about what they're doing and how it isn't so difficult to do what they've done. We do ADA brown bag trainings, we call them, where people bring their lunch, and we provide training on everything from how to work with assistance animals that may be coming into your building with somebody, to what's reasonable accommodation and how to provide it, to how to ensure program access. They choose the topics, and then we put together the training. And sometimes what we do is training, and sometimes it's more informal, where people bring their issues, and we talk about how do we begin to address some of these fairly complicated issues. The final thing we do is a week-long youth leadership forum for juniors and seniors in high school who have disabilities, and we bring them together from around the state to really help them develop their leadership skills. For many, this may be their first time away from home. For many, it's the first time they've even been around people with other disabilities that are different than their own. And the goal is, and we bring them to the Capitol, and we have them meet their legislator, their representative and senator. And sometimes we've had them on the floor when session's still been going on and introduce them. But the idea is to tell them about both their responsibilities as adults in terms of their civic opportunities, but also to then help them learn to advocate for themselves. And then finally, you just have a list of the kind of committees and councils that we partner with. Just to give you a sense of a lot of what we do is collaborative, and we partner with a number of committees and councils to get our work done. We do this. We have 7 committees and 2 task forces, and then, of course, the 15 commissioners. And a lot of work is done there. If you'll look at the program results for the quarter, we try to track by quarter what's going on. And you'll notice that the 5th and 6th quarter took a nosedive in service statistics. I'm working at trying to find out why that was. One of the reasons is my little computer here had a hard crash, and we lost all the data in it. So that was only one of the reasons why I think that's taken a nosedive, and it's something I'm looking at trying to figure out why those statistics are so different. Underneath that's our performance results for that program. We sent out surveys to all of the agency partners that we work with, both the director of the agency, and then asked them to send it to key players within the agency that work on the committees that we work on. We also sent it to the building codes divisions and in all of the counties to request them to rate how well we were doing in meeting their needs. And we had an 87% satisfaction that thought we were either good or excellent at providing those services, and our target is 90%. The other thing, I just want to give you some examples about the general program and the kinds of calls that we get. Calls can be anywhere from 2 minutes, just getting people the right numbers, to multiple calls and contacts to respond to a need. And one of the things that we do, we're asked to provide technical assistance a lot. And one of the issues was a Marion County woman who had been working with the Blind Commission and had been offered a job, but there was problems in determining the accommodations that would be needed and how to provide a reasonable accommodation. So we provided her with the technical assistance. We provided county personnel with that assistance. And she was able to be hired and is still working there. The employment department, I had a call from a consumer who was denied benefits. And after looking into it and talking to the hearings people and talking to the consumer and the field rep, we determined that it was an ADA concern and that there needed to be a modification of policies and procedures that was allowable, and so he later got his benefits. Structural Access Committee works all the time with building codes officials, and one of the things that I know we did is an issue that I think one of the commissioners will talk about, too, is in Newport, a building was being either remodeled or whatever, and we saved them. I've heard 2 figures. I've heard $25,000 and I've heard $75,000, just by providing them information about how to provide that access. They were going to do something they actually didn't need to do. And the last one was a young woman in Medford who was completing a college degree and was having trouble in her practicum in a school, and we were able to provide her with, again, the language and the tools and the skills to talk about a reasonable accommodation and what her needs were, and to provide the school then the information about modifying policies and that they could provide access to this woman. And she's successfully completing her practicum and going on with her career opportunities to be a therapist. So that's the general program, and I would just pause there to see if there are any questions before I go on.
Are there any questions? Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, the criteria that you use to classify disabilities in the survey, do you have those prepared for us? I'd be interested to understand what that criteria is.
I don't have it with me, but I can get that for you. And I'll have Eugenia make a note so that we can get that for you. And I can also get census data, which is slightly different.
Thank you.
You ready for me?
You're ready. Go ahead, Jenny.
Okay. The next program I'm going to talk about is the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, and that's a program funded with other funds. We fund that through a variety of interagency agreements with state agencies who are required to provide effective communication to clients who need that. And so the mission of that program is to ensure overall communication access to state services for persons who are deaf, hard of hearing, or late deafened. And we provide effective communication services, which means basically interpreters, sign language interpreters, assistive listening devices, and real-time captioning, which is sort of like a court reporter who actually takes notes and it appears on a screen simultaneously. So we set that up and coordinate that for those agencies that we have contracts with. We also provide training and education on deaf and hard of hearing issues, and those include many things, including how to work with interpreters, deaf culture issues, what's proper etiquette, how to use one of the TTY machines, which is a telephone that communicates with deaf people. And one of the things that we do in that program is a lot of TTY, what we call access checks. Many times state agencies have TTYs, but they forget how to use them, or they get unplugged, or a number of things happen, staff turnover, and nobody shows the new staff how to use a TTY. And so the deaf person calls, and the person answering the phone don't know what these series of tones are, and they just hang up on them. And so we let state agencies know where those problems are, and then we offer training to help remedy those issues.
Janine?
Yes.
Question, do you know whether our educational system currently is educating deaf students? Are the bulk of them in our education system, or is there still the need for the deaf school?
You know, I have my own opinion about that, but I don't know for sure. I believe there will be a need for a deaf school. And there are a number of reasons for that. Sign language interpreting is to learn ASL, to learn to communicate as a deaf person is a unique skill. And it's not something that you can learn just by sitting in a classroom. It takes intensive practice. And for many students who live in the very rural areas, their school districts aren't equipped to handle that. So I don't know a lot about that. I'd be happy to get you some information about how the deaf school works or how many people are in the regular education system versus the deaf school.
Could you also provide me with the information of how many of the public schools are actually providing education?
Okay. We can certainly do that. And I do know there are school interpreters, because we work with some school interpreters throughout the state who provide sign language interpreting to students in the public high school setting. So I do know that that happens. I just don't know the numbers.
I know in Salem that we do have in one of our schools here signing classes for not only to try to teach others, but those that are in class. So I'm very curious just to know what's existing outside of Salem.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. We also provide a lot of technical assistance and information referral to the deaf and hard of hearing community, just about resources available to them. And again, one of the things they have a need for is Americans with Disabilities Act training to understand what their rights are there are still many, many times when a deaf person will go to a hospital or a doctor or try to get an attorney, and those folks fail to provide interpreters and try to deal with maybe writing notes back and forth. And there are times when that's appropriate and you can handle your business writing notes, and there are really times when it's complex medical and legal matters where you need a sign language interpreter. So we try to help both the deaf consumer and the private person to understand what those issues are and what the law requires. You can look at our kind of service results in our Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. The difference is that when you look at the interpreter coordination, those numbers are hours, not people. So those are the hours of interpreter coordination that we provide. And the rest of them actually are people. So that is why that's somewhat different. And those are so high. The hours are so high. And it fluctuates. We can't always determine when there's going to be somebody who's in need of an interpreter. And one of the main users of our interpreters are both the Oregon Youth Authority and Child Protective Services. And so it kind of depends on what those issues are being faced by the deaf person. And there are quarters when we have a lot going on there and some when we don't. Our performance measures in that area, again, in this case, the clients of our program are really the state agencies that contract for those services. So we sent out surveys to all the state agencies who use those services to determine whether, in fact, we were meeting their needs and whether the and I'm just looking for my notes. 84% rated the services good or excellent, and our target is 85%. That's what we do in the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. Again, I would ask if there are any questions.
No, go ahead, Janine.
Okay.
Unless you have somebody else who, if you want to continue, you can continue.
Okay.
And I think I thought that. Lynn was with you, but I think it's
Eugenia
Cox.
Yeah. Okay.
And she will be helping me with the presentation. I do have some commissioners. Lynn is my chair, and Gary and Rob, and if there's time, they would like to provide a little testimony from their perspective. So,
very good.
The last program I'm going to talk about is the Client Assistance Program. This is a mandatory program. All states are required to have one. If you don't have one, then the federal funding that comes in for the vocational rehabilitation program, which is that 4-to-1 wonderful match, doesn't come in. And the other interesting note about this program is that it cannot be housed in the same agency where the services are provided. So it can't be a part of DHS. It has to be in a separate agency. The mission of the Client Assistance Program is to advise and inform advocates and clients and applicants regarding eligibility for services and benefits under the Rehabilitation Act. That means not only for vocational rehabilitation services and services under the Oregon Commission for the Blind, it also has to do with independent living centers and the services they offer and projects with industry. All of those are under the Rehabilitation Act. That program is to provide dispute resolution for individual clients' grievances. It also is to collaborate with the vocational rehabilitation agencies in developing policies to better serve their clients. It provides outreach to unserved and underserved minorities, including disability minority populations. Again, I would note that the deaf culture or deaf individuals are often underserved, and the Client Assistance Program actually has a deaf woman as an employee, and that's really helped in that area to some degree. They also inform clients and advocates about the VR programs and services, and they protect client due process rights. One of the things that happens with the Client Assistance Program is that cases come there when there is a communication problem or some kind of problem between the VR service provider or the independent living center or whoever and the client. And it's at that point that the case will come to the client assistance program to try to resolve that dispute, whatever it is. And some of those cases go to mediation. Some of them go to a fair hearing, and then they're represented by the client assistance program. The service results that we have here are actually a part of their federal requirements. So these were lifted off the federal report that goes into Region 10. And I would just note that if you look at this, you might think, oh, 69 cases, 50. That's not very many people to handle. And I would just note that the cases that come before CAP, they come there because they're complex and they've already gotten convoluted. And so it often takes months and weeks to unravel these cases. So this isn't just simple providing information. It's really resolving complicated issues. The other thing I would note about the client assistance program is then it has this kind of unique relationship where it both works to help clients in the hearings process, but then it also has an obligation to point out to the vocational rehabilitation system any trends and areas that they note where there may be common issues cropping up, a need for more training about the way a policy is interpreted. So it's both a collaborative kind of relationship and one in which they try to assist clients to get their needs met. And again, the performance results that we have for them, you can see there. And I don't know what that 100% means this year. It's very unusual that we'd have 100% satisfaction, because often the clients aren't always happy with the results they get, because sometimes the agency does prevail in client assistance program cases. So when you see our target, we didn't pick 100% for our target for that one, because we think that's sort of an anomaly. At this point, I will turn it over to Eugenia Cox.
Madam Chair, the secondary...
You want to give your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Eugenia Cox, the office manager with the Oregon Disabilities Commission. The secondary Oregon benchmarks that the Oregon Disabilities Commission are linked to are 59 employed disability, percentage of adults with lasting significant disabilities who are capable of working who are employed, and 60 disabled in poverty, percentage of Oregonians with a lasting developmental, mental, and or physical disability living in households with incomes below the federal poverty level. Excuse me. Our agency has two agency goals, which Janine explained earlier, and 6 performance measures associated with these goals. And they're listed on page 10 of your handout, page 10 and 11. In the progress board review, it was concluded that these performance measures appeared to reflect much of our agency's mission, but they did point out to us that all the measures are customer satisfaction measures, and they felt that caution was needed when relying on only surveys and questionnaires for reliable data. They felt that the agency should attempt to develop a measure that reflects actual changes in client ability to achieve economic, social, legal, and political equity. Did you have any questions on the review?
No, you can continue.
Okay. I will note that we're really struggling with our performance measures because a lot of what we do is systems change work. And so to try to measure the impact on the clients or the direct people is a little bit difficult, and we're struggling. We think we've made some progress this year, and we hope to continue to make that progress. But because we don't actually get somebody a job per se, we work to provide them information to help them with ADA issues maybe, but we don't actually find them the job. So it's a little difficult to determine whether somebody has gained economic status because of what we do. It's a combination of what we do along with what the other agencies are doing. The other thing I would note about our performance measures is that a lot of the information referral calls that we do, we're struggling, and you notice that you don't have data on one of the measures that's about our general program, and that's because, as I said, calls can last from 5 minutes to multiple contacts. It's a little hard to do them randomly, and sometimes when we've called people back, they don't necessarily remember who they've talked to or which agency in the end helped them because they've maybe have had 20 contacts by then. So we're still struggling with how to do that effectively, but we believe in performance measures and we'll continue to work on that. Where am I, Eugenia?
Oh, organization. Page 13, you'll see our organizational charts for 2001, 2003, and 2003, 2005. If anybody has any questions on those two organizational charts, I can answer those for you.
What's the function of the Effective Communication Systems Coordinator?
That's the woman who does all of the interpreter coordination. So the agency calls her and they say, I've got an appointment between a child welfare person and somebody who needs an interpreter for this, this, and this date. And then it's our job to find interpreters no matter when, no matter what community. And it's her job then to page all the interpreters, to get the job out there, to find out which one can do it, and to schedule it, to follow that up and make sure it happens.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. If I may ask a question about that specific function, what kind of experiences are you having? What kind of success are you having filling those roles as they are requested?
Our biggest trouble comes in filling requests in rural communities. There just are not enough interpreters out there in Ontario or Baker City or Klamath Falls or parts of the state. Interpreters tend to settle in urban areas, so we don't have usually very many problems in Portland, Salem, and Eugene. But sometimes we have to send interpreters from Eugene to Bend or from Portland to Pendleton in order to accomplish a job. We are looking at technology that might help actually do that using video conferencing. But I would have to write a private grant for that. It's mm-hmm. pretty spendy technology, and it's not quite there yet. But it's one of the issues that's a concern because there just aren't enough interpreters, and they can't make a living in those rural communities, which is why they don't end up settling there. There's just not enough work for them.
And so, follow up. Have there been occasions then when you've not been able to meet a request?
Yes. Chair Wenders and Senator Gordley, is it?
Yes.
Sorry, I don't know voices. Yes, there are occasions when we are not able to fill a particular request, and we let them know that. If you like, I can get you. We do have a fill rate percentage and a target, and I don't remember what those are. I know our fill rate, I believe it's above 95%, but I can bring that information back.
It would be helpful, and by the way, I enjoyed our conversation the other day. It would be helpful to have a sense of unmet needs, and thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Janine, when you provide the information that Senator Morris requested on the definition of disabilities, the categories, would you also provide, as near as possible, the percentage of the individuals that you deal with? For example, I noticed that your budget has a higher level of funding for deaf and hard of hearing, and so it would be nice to know what are the types of disabilities that you're working with?
Chair Winters, I will do my best to get that information. We don't actually track by disability because we're obligated to serve all disabilities, but I will see what kind of statistics I can come up with. And I would just note for your information that one of the reasons that that particular budget is high is just the whole issue of providing effective communication is probably one of the more costly things in terms of providing equal access. It's one thing to make a building structurally accessible, and when it's done, it's done. You don't have to do anymore. With providing effective communication, it's an ongoing need. It doesn't change. And so each time there's a need for that communication, then there's a need for the interpreters.
Madam Chair, I'd like to add a little something to that also. Other funds also.
Because our transcriber, when you speak, state your name so then she knows who's talking. Thank you.
Eugenia Cox. The other funds also, which includes the Deaf and Hard of Hearing program, also includes funding that is filtered through other funds, which is for the Youth Leadership Forum and also for the Services Committee. So that is part of that other funds funding that is not included with the Deaf and Hard of Hearing program.
From a planning standpoint, it's kind of nice to know what your universe is and what your areas that you're serving so that you get a better grasp of what your needs are. And so if, as much as you can, Janine, get that information for us.
I will do that. And we can also perhaps change the way we track information and try to do a better job of collecting that demographic information on people.
Thank you.
If we're ready, I'd move on to the budget issues. I would just note that we've had significant budget management improvement this biennium. We've had no cash flow issues, and even with the prospective loss of the Technology Access for Life needs funds, we were able to stay within that reduced amount and function. Our LFO noted, I did get a call the other day. They are going to provide the Technology Access for Life needs federal funding for the last quarter of this biennium and three quarters of next biennium. That's both good news for us because we'll get some administrative costs, but more importantly, it's good news for the consumers who depend on those services in locating the appropriate technology to help them. As you may have heard yesterday from the Oregon Commission for the Blind, technology is one of the key things that levels the playing field for people with disabilities, and it makes a huge difference if we can help people find the technology that they need. I would just note that last time we had a 1.8 FTE reduction in other funds, and we managed that by shifting some of the manager of that program, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, took on more training responsibilities. I, as the director, and Eugenia's office manager, took on more of the contract development and monitoring responsibilities. So we were able to manage on those with the positions. I would also note that the deaf community would like the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program to be stronger. And in particular, they're concerned that we can't do enough to work with the private sector because all our funds really are geared toward working with the public sector. And so that continues to be an unmet need in terms of working with the private sector folks to provide interpreters and to provide effective communication. I also thought it's interesting for you to know that even though the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program is funded with other funds, when we've asked those agencies who fund that program, Employment, Department of Ed, Department of Human Services, are those funds their general funds or federal funds or other, I would note that for the Department of Human Services, which is a big chunk of our I think 400 and some thousand a biennium, it comes from other funds and federal funds. And from Employment and Department of Ed, it's all federal funds. So that was important to us to know that in this kind of area where general funds are so tight. We had really no significant issues that came out of the director change of audit that the LFO referred to earlier. We were able to clean up a few policies that they wanted us to do a better job of tracking some meal reimbursements and that kind of thing, and we were able to do that successfully. I guess the other thing I would say about our budgeting and financial stability is that I have asked the Department of Administrative Services for assistance in really helping us develop a long-range plan, more short-range now, to really look at how we need to restructure to do the best job we can in meeting the need, and how, what kind of optional or alternative funding can we be looking at. So those are some of the issues I'm looking ahead toward. I'm also talking with other commissions and councils who are in federal statute just to see, are there any efficiencies we could gain in working together? How might we be more effective? And I don't know where that's going to go yet, because each of those commissions have a whole different set of federal requirements, and I don't know what's allowed in terms of mixing funds and the rest of that. But we are looking to try to be as efficient and effective as we can be. We don't have a specific strategic plan at this point. We do that through our public forums, through public comment at our meetings, taking that information, redesigning the committee structure each year. And then, again, as I said, the Department of Administrative Services, in fact, Mr. Weeks himself, has agreed to make sure that we get some assistance in developing a plan that's really going to look at our long-term funding survivability. With that, again, I would turn it over to Eugenia Cox to finish the rest of the presentation.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Eugenia Cox. On page 15 of your handout, it shows the composition of the commission positions, and it's laid out in a graph. As you can see, the administrative staff has decreased over the last three biennium, but the commissioner total has stayed constant. In the 2003-2005 biennium, you can see there's an increase of 0.3 full-time equivalent that will be explained when I review the agency's policy packages. Below that, you've got the affirmative action numbers that are listed. If anybody has any questions on these statistics, I'll try my best to answer them.
Continue.
Okay. On the last page 16, it shows the current policy packages that we have. Policy back packages 010, and that's policy package for the 2002 third special session, the Oregon Disabilities Commission unspecified reductions taken in the legislative third special session in 2001-2003 biennium. This reduction was taken in services and supplies. The requested budget amount was a reduction of 2,630. Policy package 091, this was 2002 fifth special session, section 2, the Oregon Disabilities Commission unspecified reductions taken in the legislative fifth special session, section 2, in the 2001-2003 biennium. The reduction includes services and supplies and personal service savings from hiring the office specialist two at a lower salary step than budgeted. The requested budget amount was a reduction of $23,400. In policy package 092, additional program reduction, this package is a partial restoration from House Bill 5100 of $3,400 in unspecified cuts taken in policy package 091, and that is an increase of $3,400. Policy package, did anybody have any questions on those three packages?
Any questions? No?
Okay. Policy package 101 was the restoration of full-time equivalent from technology access for life needs, which was the phased-out program or maybe not phased out program in the deaf and hard of hearing access shortfall. This package is necessary in order to shift 57,554 personnel and administrative costs from program unit 002 federal funds, the Technology Access for Life Need program, to program unit 003 other funds, deaf and hard of hearing access program. This shift in funding source is necessary due to the probability of a large share of federal funds through the Technology Access for Life Needs grant not being available next biennium to fund these positions. And the requested amount is an increase in other funds of $57,554.
Representative Smith.
Regarding Policy Package 101, when that was originally funded by the federal government, was that in the form of a grant?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, yes, it was a grant. We've had the grant since, I believe, 1995, and we contract that service out to a corporate nonprofit that does the work.
And so, and you knew that grant would soon expire. The grant was for a certain number of years, is that right?
Well, previously, sunsets had been lifted on that grant many times, and so there, we were led to believe both that it could go away and that it could be funded. And I don't think Congress really had made up its mind yet. In fact, we didn't get the word until, as I said, maybe a week ago, that it was going to be extended another year. There is still hope that once that happens, that, in fact, the technology gap still exists. And so there is some belief that that program may be funded in the future. It's unknown.
A follow-up. Have you taken any steps outside state and federal funding to try to fill this need?
The private nonprofit that actually does the service, their board is working diligently to try to fill that need. We recognize that it's a huge need. As I said, technology is a huge need for people with disabilities, and they have a number of grants in progress and are hoping to, in fact, continue beyond whatever the federal government does with grant funds.
And then do they go to the companies, for instance, that make this technology or some of our local companies who are still showing a profit? And I just would like to encourage you, and maybe you are and I don't know, to try to go out to within the community and let the need be known and then try to raise funds in whatever way you can. Although I do think this is a very important need that needs to be filled, we have so many of those, and this is a large request, and you may not get it. I think that's a reality we need to look at. So in situations like this, and I don't know about your Package 102 situation, but it's kind of a hard situation for us legislators when we see it, like the end of a federal grant coming. And the feds are good at funding a program for a couple years and then not continuing it. And then it kind of leaves the state hanging to go to the general fund pot and fill it. We have a lot of requests like this, and so, if you could seek other areas, it sure would be a lot of help. Thank you.
Just a point of clarification. This is an other fund category.
Yes.
And there's no general fund involved in this particular action.
No.
Who's the nonprofit?
They're called Technology Access for Life Needs, and they're based here in Salem.
In Salem.
But they have providers that at Portland State, and they go out on the road because they're obligated to serve the whole state. So they serve people throughout Oregon. And as a response, Chair Winters, to Representative Smith's question, yes, we recognize the need to seek other funds and have gone to places like Intel and Hewlett-Packard and others to try to take advantage of that. To date, I think they've been unsuccessful in getting those two companies to fund them, but we will continue to work on that.
Thank you.
Senator Shields.
I guess I'm showing my ignorance here or just confusion. You said it was other funds?
It is other funds.
What is that other fund?
Go ahead, Janine.
The other funds that come in for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, the Services Committee, and Youth Leadership Forum are the other funds.
I don't think they quite heard you, Janine.
Oh, I'm sorry. The other funds are the funds that from state agencies that help fund the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, the Youth Leadership Forum, and the Services Committee. Those are the other funds.
So technically speaking, those could be general fund originated originally.
I've asked Mr. Olson to check to make sure that the human services piece was really all federal funds and not general funds.
Okay.
It's all probability that the employment piece, however, is probably all federal funds, just based on how the agencies work. And so Mr. Olson is going to check to make certain that that's true with human services. But that's how it comes to us as other funds if they were all federal.
Thank you.
Senator Shields.
Yeah, I just want to put on the record that while I understand this issue and I understand Representative Smith's comment about looking for, possibly foundation money and so on, I can't even count the number of times I've been in meetings where we've asked people to go look at foundations. And I had a report recently that foundations, of course, are suffering tremendous losses in this recession as well and have reached almost historic lows in terms of their ability to do grant funding. So, I wouldn't want Janine's or anybody else's expectations to get too high in that arena.
Point well taken. Janine, you may continue.
All right, and actually, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to Eugenia to finish the policy packages.
Madam Chair, this is Eugenia Cox. Policy package 102, which is position reclass and restoration, and it was modified from the original policy package. This purpose of this policy package is to restore one position to full-time status of 1 FTE. The 0.3 full-time equivalent portion of the position was lost during the 0103 biennium. The position restoration of 0.3 FTE to program unit 1003, other funds for the executive support specialist 2, is critical for the overall success of the agency. The requested budget amount is $29,178. Did anybody have any questions on that one?
Pam?
Hey, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Pam Teschner with the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. And I'll be walking you through the handout that says that across the front of it, 2003-05 governor's budget, and it has that spiral notebook look to it on the left side. The actually, it's page 2. It lays out the, as you're getting real used to seeing now, the table that compares across time where this budget is, and the probably the more significant items to note is the increase in other funds from the 0103 levels. I believe that's due primarily to the work of the agency in going out and being able to get generate more of that activity and bring in more other funds with those interagency agreements. And the drop, as has already been explained, in the federal funds. When we began the development of this budget, we wanted to develop it with the assumption that that grant would indeed sunset and not to anticipate it.
With the federal funds, with that change, those figures will also change.
Yes, this is all going to change. As Janine pointed out, we just recently found out that they're going to extend that for a year, so we'll adjust that. Okay, the page 3, the pie chart, just shows of those three funding sources, general fund, other fund, and federal funds, how that looks in a pie chart. I might, again, just the other funds, it comes solely from the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Program, which is interagency contracts, the largest of that being from the Department of Human Services. And Janine was correct, I think it's somewhere around $450,000. And when I looked into the budget system, it looked to me like their money is coming 98% from other fund source for them. The federal funds comes from the Rehabilitation Services Administration, which is part of the United States Department of Education, and that is for the Client Assistance Program. And that also is money that's passed through to a private corporation. Some of that money is. The fourth thing.
Senator Carter, please.
And I should have asked this to Janine. But from the other funds, are any of those dollars endowment dollars?
Madam Chair and Senator Carter, no, they are not.
And then maybe one of the ways you might think from our endowment dollars, because I know when I was president of an agency, that's one of the things that we started looking at as a means of fundraising.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's see. Where was I? Page 6. Another pie chart that just shows for this agency their categories. If you take their $1.3 million total funds, it almost splits in half personal services and services and supplies. Page 7. This budget is down a bit from the 0103 legislatively adopted budget, due primarily to that the assumed sunset of that federal grant. Rick talked a little bit already about the roll-up of the position actions that added about $100,000 in total funds. These on page 8, these three packages are called essential packages. And again, I know you've heard about these before already, but the 010 package is a package that factors in any savings from vacancies as well as non-state personal services inflation. In this case, for this agency, because it is a small agency, the Department of Administrative Services has decided that for those little agencies not to subtract out the vacancy savings because there's so few people that there can be wide fluctuations of a year without any and then suddenly a year with a ton. And so that's what this package did, was to add back what was subtracted for vacancy savings. So that's pretty much most of what that $12,700 is. The 020 we've talked about with that assumed phase-out. 030 is the inflation and price list adjustments, added $26,000, about $500 of total funds, and about $8,000 of general fund was added to this budget for inflation. The policy packages on page 9, Eugenia did walk through those already. The 092 package, that adding back the $3,400 to general fund, was just a way of trying to lessen the impact. Again, looking at small agencies, we wanted to keep them viable, and so we backed off a little bit on that reduction. Actually, the $23,400 reduction from the fifth special session, we just eased that back a little bit and made it an even $20,000. And as has already been described, package 101 is to, when we were assuming that the Technology Access for Life Needs grant would sunset, they shifted. There's a little bit of FTE that's attached to that federal funding, and so that's what package 101 did, was to shift that FTE over to other funds. And that 0.38 FTE is actually spread across three positions. And package 102 is not really a reclass. That was an old note. It's restoring the 0.3 full-time equivalent that was taken away from one position last biennium. And I might add that both of these packages then are going to be funded by other funds, and there was a significant other fund ending balance, or there will be for this biennium, 0103, which...
How much is that ending balance?
About $168,000 of other fund ending balance that will be utilized to for those two packages.
Which two packages?
101 and 102. Because both of those are shifting money over to other funds, and they were, they are, it's the other fund ending balance from this biennium that is financing those in part.
For 0305?
Yeah, so it will be an 0305 beginning balance in other funds, about $168,000. Now, we always like to have a few months' worth of operations when we start, but yes, that was what's behind those packages in terms of funding, because I kind of sensed that there was some concern about where that other fund was coming from. And as it stands now with this budget, with all of that in it, it leaves an ending balance for 0305 of about $53,000 going into 0507. Do you have any questions at all about that?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ending balance of how much after?
For 0305?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The way it's calculated now, and again, all this is changing because of that grant, $53,000 approximately. And we will be talking with the LFO analysts and trying to adjust this budget for that grant and possibly adjusting package 101 because of that.
Thank you.
Thank you. We do have public testimony today. If the agency or Pam doesn't have any other comments and there's no other questions, and so I would like to call up, I know the chairman, Lynn, would you like to come forward and Lynn Cameron with the commission?
Madam Chair and fellow committee members, I'm Lynn Cameron with the Oregon Disabilities Commission. I have never given a testimony before, and so before I talk about the Oregon Disabilities Commission, I've been to the Capitol here in the last few months and seen how, and this is as a private citizen, as I am a volunteer, I've seen how senators and representatives have been treated by the public on a number of occasions. So what I would like to say is that my voice is shaky here, but I respect you, and I have compassion for the decisions that you're having to make in this political climate for the state that has the worst budget. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just want to say that because I seem to be reamed before by the public. The commission has just multi-talented commissioners. We range through all sorts of disabilities, and I think it was Madam Chair that brought up, you know, what disabilities do we work with? Well, the commission itself has people that are knowledgeable in mental health, developmental disabilities, cerebral palsy, just wheelchair access, deaf, hard of hearing, visually impaired, blind. So, I mean, we really cover quite the realm of disabilities. With the commission, we have, as you're aware of from some of the committees that were mentioned, extended committees that commissioners chair. Well, with those committees are also lots and lots of people that volunteer their time to the state of Oregon. I mean, free services to the state of Oregon and around the state. And they are just talented and very professional people. As for myself, I used to live in Burns, Oregon, for 10 years, up until about 3 years ago. I did at that time ask for reimbursement for my mileage, but since I've moved to outside of Turner, which is still, it takes me a half hour one way and a half hour, so it's quite a few miles, I've not asked for reimbursement. I have traveled to different parts of the state of Oregon on behalf of the commission and not asked for lodging or reimbursement for my mileage, simply to try to help out our budget. Our director has not asked for and has step increase since she has taken this position to try to keep our budget balanced and help make it possible for commissioners to do their work. I feel like that this commission is the people's voice. It was mandated by the legislature years past to be the voice of the people of all disabilities. And so I hope that you take that into your consideration when you're looking at budgets. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. And we want to thank you for your comments about this panel. You're right. We often hear some voices that aren't quite as kind. So thank you.
Well, Madam Chair, I have a profoundly disabled daughter. That's why I'm interested in the disabilities. And I think that people are living in such fear. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what it must be like for you folks to have to listen to those fears and know that you still have to make cuts because there's no money. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Rob Cook and Gary Boley.
Madam Chair and the committee, thank you for letting me speak. I've spoken once before. My name is Rob Cook. I'm a commissioner, one of the newest commissioners on the Oregon Disabilities Commission, and I also work, as many of the people that are commissioners and work with, I work in other related capacities. I'm a services coordinator for a new independent living organization in Lane County, where I live, which has 30-plus percent people with disabilities. And in a moment, I'll exemplify why that's important. I come to give support for any funding and any activity that's proactive. And if you've heard me speak before in other two meetings, you notice it. I don't like it when people in your position have to be kind of disabused for making decisions that are difficult. But I think one of the things that's wonderful is this word, efficiencies. And one way I'd like to exemplify that through the commission is ATI, Access Technologies Incorporated, the Talon nonprofit. There are mechanisms in place right now with a new executive director who is a lady named Lori Brooks who came up from the troops. And rather than request funding from outside sources, a structural change is something that she brought to our attention at the commissioner's meeting, the first time I saw her speak. And that's instead of passing through materials, software, and hardware, which has always been the way before, kind of like, let's give this to the rehab people without charging. She has gone directly. In other words, she's now making a profit on materials they purvey instead of just a straight pass-through as a purveyor for adaptive technology, which is not an easy thing to do, but at the same time, the competition is high. As I said, I relate this to the organization I'm working in starting. We've bought materials from them specifically, not just to give to support because of the amount of knowledge. And on top of that, there's ways to make money. Now, they're supporting themselves and also helping me because there's a vocational rehabilitation client that I work with who is a non-accessibility computer specialist who's not been able to be employed. We're putting together a program whereby he can work through Access Technologies to learn Access Technology training and with DVR assistance. See, all these things work together. The Office of Vocational Rehabilitation will pay his fees to be trained. He'll go through a short course because he has this vast experience. He'll end up closing his case probably within a year, which will provide consumer services to Access Technology in a county with 30% people with disabilities. Well, presently, there is none. So that's an outcome, straight money coming in. And people within the state will not have to travel, you know, through ATI to serve the needs of people who are on rehabilitation services money or their private nonprofits and public nonprofit like ours, Lane Independent Living. So there's a very, not often complex, linkage that the commission can provide. I'm a good example. I have a master's in rehabilitation teaching for the blind and a dual master's in international community development education. I've worked in other countries, Alaska, Michigan, California, in state and federal services, and not always in rehab. I have a secondary credential also, but I chose to live in Oregon and only moved here a little less than 2 years ago. In the way I found my pathways for information and access to public transportation and basically a lot of the state issues involved with disability was by calling the Oregon Disabilities Commission. The previous executive director is on our board for Lane Independent Living Alliance, Eugene Oregon, and he told me if I'm really interested in finding out anything, everything, and working somewhere in the field I like, I should call Janine. That ended up being pushed by my friend Gene to become a commissioner. And again, it comes down to the bucks. I'm the one that referred the gentleman from Newport, who's a city facilities manager, to Daryl Ackerman, who is the commissioner, who's the chair of that structural access committee. And I'm the one that knows it did save 70 grand because it would have been a pointless negotiation to create access when it wasn't needed because there was a whole other part of the building was accessible that led into the same facility. Understanding the ADA is not easy, but it sure helps when you have 15 commissioners to refer, 5 or 8 other people adjunct on a committee, and these people are absolute experts. I've been disabled for 20 years. I have my own income outside. I bring money to the state. My friend Daryl, who's on that committee, he saves money and brings money. We work. But the real bottom line is trying to understand and negotiate just the life of the people with disabilities and their concerns is not as easy as it seems sometimes on a piece of paper. And, you know, some of the examples I have are pretty extreme, but as a community volunteer, which I now will change within the week as a paid employee of this independent living agency, I've gotten 11 people jobs as a volunteer. All of those people were disabled. Some of them became office and clerical staff. Some I sent to other agencies. Some are about to go through their final interviews because there's new funding or new recruitment with the Office of Vocational Rehab. There's a lot of integral work, but interrelated areas to get touched. And I don't think I'm a unique example. So I just really want to state that I know I moved to this state because of the Disabilities Commission, the access, the communities. And now I've had 5 phone calls in the last 6 months to our information and access line for Lane Independent. Those 5 people come from other states, and 3 of them are business owners that have a return income on their own private businesses for about 50 grand apiece. One guy made 73,000 bucks last year, and he would like to bring his business to Eugene. He's disabled. So we work a lot for a lot of reasons, and even though the positive outcomes hopefully are for people with disabilities, I really think the end result comes down to everybody shares in any positive movement.
Thank you. Gary.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Gary Boley. I'm Vice Chair of the Disabilities Commission. And I've been honored to serve the Disabilities Commission and Oregonians with disabilities for the last 5 years on the Disabilities Commission. And one of my major roles, given my past employment history and transportation, has been that of the Commission's transportation liaison. In doing that, I've represented people with disabilities on the Public Transit Advisory Committee and the Oregon Transportation's Passenger Rail Council, both of which are part of the Oregon Department of Transportation and make recommendations directly to the Transportation Commission. My focus, obviously, has been that of accessible transportation, making sure that things happen so that people with disabilities do have access to transport to their, and have their transportation needs met across the state. I think we've been real fortunate, and I think it's been advantageous to the state and as well as to local community partners to have somebody who has experience with the Americans with Disabilities Act and the requirements of accessible transportation to to be able to go out in the state and be proactive in helping to educate cities, counties, communities, and transportation providers as to what their responsibilities are with respect to accessible transportation, so that we can do that in a proactive way. And oftentimes that leads to more cost-effective, efficient piece of transportation which meets the local community needs in a much better way. I've also been part of the most recent intercity bus program, which the Department of Transportation has received federal funds. And it's been really a gratifying experience to watch, just go through the first grant cycle, which after projects are up and running, I believe within the next year, using, again, federal funds, that we will bring up to about 90% of our small communities that have 2,500 people or more with services that will connect the small communities with their next larger communities with trips with at least one round trip each day available to folks. So I would hope that you would realize that the work and the value of the entire commission, the staff, the commission staff, and the 14 volunteers, other than just myself, and the thousands of hours that we spend volunteering our time across the state. And as Janine mentioned earlier in her report, the local community forums that we've held and hear folks on the top of their list consistently, at least the top three issues of on their lists have been transportation. It's great to have services available, but it's not necessarily a good thing to have services available if you don't have transportation or accessible transportation to get to those services. So just once again, I truly feel that the commission has developed effective partnerships between state agencies, local, county, and city governments, and I strongly urge you to support 5514 so that the commission can continue to do its work. Thank you.
Thank you. Jacqueline, Zimmer, Jones. Did I get it all right, Jacqueline?
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if I can.
I think we even spell it.
No. Did you hear that?
All right, Jacqueline.
Yes. I'm changing name.
You know, at Jacqueline and I could spell our name the same, and I said Jacqueline because when I grew up, I was Jackie, and the only time I was in trouble was when my mom said, Jacqueline. So, Jacqueline?
That would be me. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jacqueline Zimmer Jones, and I'm the director of the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. And I think I'll also echo people's gratitude to you for taking the sort of usually verbal and press abuse that you get, and I just want to apologize if any of you ever take it personally when I talk about how we still need services, because I think it's important for you to do your part and then for us to do our part, so don't take that personally. That being said, you know, there are some area agencies on aging that do provide services to people with disabilities that are between the ages of 18 and 65, but there are a number of areas of the state where we do not do that service. And the voice of the coalition is a coalition of seniors and people with disabilities is very important, but the work of the Oregon Disabilities Commission stands out for a lot of reasons. But you will see us working together on a lot of things. And Gary mentioned transportation, and we'll be doing an event here next week, and we will be stressing to legislators the importance of transportation services for seniors and people with disabilities. One, functionally, just so that people have transportation to work and to be the productive citizens that they really can be, and two, to get them to medical appointments, and three, just to keep them connected in the community and a social network. All of those things are important, and I use this opportunity to remind you that the legislature is withholding about $1.8 million in cigarette tax revenues that does provide transportation for seniors and people with disabilities as a result of the movement to prepare for the next revenue forecast. And if that should be below a certain level, it will trigger the state out automatically hanging on to that money. And I just want to just do a little math for you, and that is about $1.8 million in general fund equals about 450,000 rides for the remainder of this biennium. So I use this opportunity in their budget to just remind you of that particular point. So as I said, sort of not all seniors are disabled, and not all people with disabilities are seniors. So we really need the mission and the voice of the Oregon Disabilities Commission. And quite frankly, we couldn't afford their expertise if we put them all on the payroll. If you look at the 14 commissioners and the number of hours that they contribute and the value and the good that they do, we would be in a budget deficit. You know, we just flat out couldn't afford it. So we're here today to speak in support of their budget and to keeping it as whole as possible and allowing them to continue to do the good work that they do. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
You're very welcome.
See, I didn't call you at the end. It was Jacqueline.
That's right. My mother always called me Jackie when I was in trouble.
For next week, members, we will begin House Bill 5030, which is the Human Service Health Services. I would ask that you take the time this weekend to do some homework. We will have health services all week next week, and you know, it's a lot more. It makes it a little easier if you've gotten into the budget, and I will check and make sure that you have tomorrow the information on your desk. But I would suggest that you do begin to bone up our. I think we'll start accelerating pretty soon as we begin to look forward to April, mid-April, because after that we'll begin work sessions. So
yippee.
Just to give you some heads up to begin to do some homework. And with that, I want to thank all of you for coming today, and we are adjourned until Monday. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Madam Chair.